For those of you who were here last Sunday, you are aware that Pastor Brad inaugurated a series of messages that he'll be bringing to us about the life of Joseph as recorded in the book of Genesis. But this being the fifth Sunday of the month, which only happens a handful of times a year where we have five Sundays in a month, we have decided that on those particular Sundays we're going to step aside from whatever the normal preaching and teaching exposition happens to be to address certain questions and topics that are of interest certainly to believers, but also to unbelievers. And we will be addressing one of those questions today. And the question is, are human beings basically good? Back in the mid-1950s, there was a novel that an Englishman wrote that even though when it first came out, it wasn't that well received, but then within just a few years, it became a bestseller, and he became an award-winning author. But the name of the book, and some of you will recognize it if not by the novel, but by two movies that have been made based on the book, and it's called The Lord of the Flies. And if you've read that book or have seen that movie, it is very disturbing. It's about a group of British boys from a British school that become stranded on an uninhabited island. And these schoolboys proceed to try and set in place some kind of governance and some kind of way of trying to survive until hopefully they are rescued by some future ship that would be passing by the island. Well, if you know the story, the boy's behavior begins to unravel, and they begin to resort to and regress to a very primitive state, acting in a very savage and brutal way, even to the extent of killing one of their own. And the dramatic conclusion of the novel is when a ship does come and a marine officer comes aboard and catches the boys in the middle of sort of a frenzy, all of a sudden they snap back to reality, and the man who's come ashore is obviously shocked by what he sees and how cruel these boys had become. Now, The Lord of the Flies, or I should say Lord of the Flies, it doesn't have the definite article, is fiction. So we can breathe a sigh of relief, well, that's not true. But I'll tell you, there are high school football programs that are being shut down around our country due to acts of hazing that are so mean, so brutal, so much an invasion of the most personal of private spaces that they're actually shutting football programs down. And I'm talking about California, Iowa, New Jersey. The examples are in the dozens. And that is not fiction. Now, are these kinds of incidents, such as these high school young men who are acting in such unseemly ways, are they just the exception? Are they the few bad apples in the barrel, as it were? Because certainly we can readily think of all kinds of examples of good things that people do, kind things, benevolent things, caring things. And so we see both ends of the spectrum amongst ourselves, amongst mankind. But it does beg the question, do we have a basically good nature that is corrupted by society, or do we basically have a bad nature that is kept in check by society? Well, I'm going to attempt to answer that question, as you can see by the outline provided for you, by first considering what mankind tells us. Secondly, what experience tells us, and then finally, what the Bible tells us about human nature. What mankind tells us. Well, as you probably know, it depends on who you listen to. Whether people are basically good or basically bad has been analyzed and assessed and debated for most of recorded history, going all the way back to 500 years before Christ. Confucius, the Chinese philosopher, he concluded that people are essentially good. Within a century and a half, one of his most devoted followers said, I don't think so. And he had a much darker view of what he observed about human nature. About 400 years before Christ, Aristotle and the Greek philosophers to follow grappled with this issue of human nature, and Aristotle posed that there was a divided nature in human beings. And by the time the Roman Empire, standing on the shoulders of the Greek Empire and the Greek philosophers, as they're dealing with these kinds of issues, there was a Latin phrase, tabula rasa. I don't know Latin except that I read what other people tell me about it. And the word tabula in Latin referred to that tablet that was used for taking notes. And of course, when a tablet was filled and if they no longer needed the information, they would heat the wax on the tablet so it could be smoothed over. And it was called erasing the tablet or making a blank slate. Well, some philosophers seized on that and said human beings are born with a blank slate. Neither good nor bad, and just environment and circumstances of one's upbringing determines whether that person begins to act in an essentially good or bad manner. And I can't give you the list, it's too long, but just a few notable examples where the debate has raged. Thomas Hobbes, the 17th century English philosopher, had a dim view of natural human nature. In fact, he said, we human beings were basically bad, or at least base and crude creatures whose lives, if lived by our own lights, were destined to be, in his exact words, nasty, brutish, short. But a century went by. 18th century French philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau, he disagreed. He thought people were basically good. To come to this side of the ocean, there was a man in the 19th century by the name of William Graham Sumner, the very first person to teach a course called sociology on the North American continent. A very learned and educated man. He went to Yale College, also studied at the University of Geneva, studying Latin and Hebrew, then the University of Göttingen in Germany. He ended up studying in Switzerland and also at Oxford. My goodness. He learned Hebrew, Greek, Latin, French, German, and in middle age taught himself Dutch, Spanish, Portuguese, Italian, Russian, Polish, Danish, and Swedish. But he became the first to teach a course entitled Sociology in the English-speaking world. And with all of his learning, having been around the world, this was his conclusion as the father of sociology. Quote, everyone meets fraud, corruption, ignorance, selfishness, and all the other vices of human nature. The vices and passions of human nature, as cupidity, lust, vindictiveness, ambition, and vanity. And he found such human nature to be universal in all people, in all places, and in all stations of society. You may not recognize the name Thomas Anthony Harris, but those of us that are older than 40 will remember his best-selling book of the 60s, I'm Okay, You're Okay. Remember that title? It made him a wealthy man. And yet, I don't know how much later, but somewhere subsequent to the writing of that book, he observed that his data that he had on hand observed sin or badness or evil, whatever we call the flaw in our species, is apparent in every person. And then even recently, in the last few years, researchers at Harvard and Yale have been doing studies, particularly of infants and toddlers, to see if putting them in certain situations, whether they could identify, and some claim they've identified, basic instinctual good nature coming from these children. Of course, they're very quick to say that nothing definitive can be concluded by the tests that they do. But one article was entitled, "We Are Good After All." And so that debate continues. So when we say, what does mankind tell us? Well, again, I say it depends on who you listen to. And the battle between, is it nature or is it nurture? Do people do bad things because it's in our nature to do them, or do we do bad things because we've been nurtured in such a way that it makes us have a propensity to do bad and evil things? Well, let's just, for the moment, lay aside the analyses of sociologists and psychiatrists and behavioralists. What does experience tell us? Just think about your life and the world as you know it. Why does human history supply us with such a barrage of endless acts of evil committed by Homo sapiens? And when I say human history, I mean human history right up until this morning. I guarantee you that when I do this afternoon, what I do most every Sunday afternoon, you're going to think, flop down on the sofa, which is partially true. But we have a next-door neighbor who gets the Gainesville Sun 7 days a week. She's a very sweet neighbor. And she knows I like the sports page, especially during football season. So every Sunday when I go home by my front door, she has folded back up the Sunday paper and put it there for me to have. And I guarantee you, when I read the Gainesville Sun this afternoon, there will be article after article describing the domestic abuse, the assaults, the robberies, the thefts in our own city as well as around the world. And you know this. I'm just echoing what you already know when you watch the news or read the news on the internet or in the newspaper. This is very recent, Gainesville Sun. We have seen the longtime leader of Gainesville's Fraternal Order of Police sentenced for stealing from the union, sending a friend and mayor to resounding defeat in his bid for re-election. Admission of plagiarism led our school district superintendent to resign. And then to go overseas, the nation where half my family lives, in Brazil. I don't know if you're aware of the scandal that has been raging in Brazil. It's a scandal that involves a humongous construction company that has been paying bribes to representatives in their government. But this isn't just a couple of people. The construction company has agreed to pay $2 billion in fines, and as a part of the plea bargaining with the construction company, they've decided to give testimony about the leaders they've been giving kickbacks to. And it's led their Supreme Court on a crusade that has indicted 40 representatives, 24 senators, and 8 members of the president's cabinet, including impeaching the president, and now they're going after the former president. Good news for Haiti. The UN has decided that country is stable enough to have the UN peacekeeping force leave. The only problem is the UN peacekeeping force is leaving a rather tarnished reputation. As our own representative of the United Nations brought up recently, these countries that sent troops need to be accountable for the fact that 134 of the peacekeepers have been identified as having been part of a ring that was sexually abusing 9 children. I understand you're shaking your head. I mean, these are the people who are there keeping peace, protecting them. What do these 9 children think about UN peacekeepers who are abusing them? The historical record of the evils that have existed in human history that have affected much of the human race few more reminders. The Ottoman Turks targeted millions of Armenian Christians for death during World War I. We're all too familiar with the German Nazi regime that murdered 6 million European Jews. 2 out of every 3 Jews living in Europe, including more than 1 million children and babies. The Soviet communist regime slaughtered about 5 million Ukrainians and about 25 million other innocents. It has been projected that the Chinese government, through its entire communist revolution, has killed about 70 million Chinese. The North Korean communist regime has built what one can only call the world's largest concentration camp. In my reading, I have discovered that over the past 3,400 years of recorded human history, the world has been entirely at peace for 268 of those 3,400 years. In the Congo, in the decade between 98 and 2008, over 5 million people were murdered, and tens, if not hundreds of thousands of women were raped. And of course, before that, about 10 million Africans were kidnapped and made slaves in the European slave trade, and another 10 to 18 million Africans were enslaved by Arab slave traders. Do you know that America has been at war 93% of our nation's history? We have never gone a decade without being at war with someone. In fact, the only time the United States went 5 years without war was during the isolationist period of the Great Depression, 1935 to 1940. But even that's a bit of a misnomer because, of course, even though we weren't in the war, we were certainly producing a lot of military ordnance that we were sending to the Allies and helping England. Now, I don't want to get into, I realize that there is just war and there's unjust war, and I'm not going to be passing judgment at this point. It's just that the fact is war has characterized this planet. And then, let me throw one other reminder from history at you. In 1977, on July the 13th, New York was reeling from the panic of the Son of Sam murders, serial killings. The economy was in terrible shape, and then lightning struck, literally, and New York City went dark with no power. 25 hours later, more than 1,616 stores were damaged. A total of 1,037 fires were started, including 14 multiple alarm fires. One newspaper gave the title, "Why the 1977 Blackout Was One of New York's Darkest Hours." And it wasn't because of the lack of electricity. It was the behavior of human beings during the blackout. Thieves stole 50 new Pontiacs from a Bronx car dealership in Brooklyn. Youths were seen backing up cars to targeted stores, tying ropes around the store's grates, and using the cars to pull the grates away before looting the store. 550 police officers were injured in the mayhem. It was the largest mass arrest in the city's history. 3,776 people were arrested. H.G. Wells, probably to an American audience, most famous for writing the science fiction War of the Worlds, which caused a panic when it was put on radio and people thought it was for real, with Martians invading. But H.G. Wells at one point, and I'm borrowing this from Tim Keller in his book, Reason for God. He has these two quotes at the beginning of one of his chapters. There's two quotes by H.G. Wells, and the first quote goes this way. Can we doubt that presently our race will more than realize our boldest imaginations, that we'll achieve unity and peace, and that our children will live in a world made more splendid and lovely than any palace or garden that we know, going on from strength to the strength in an ever-widening circle of achievement? What man has done, the little triumphs of his present state, form but the prelude to the things that man has yet to do. But then he also wrote these words. The cold-blooded massacres of the defenseless, the return of deliberate and organized torture, mental torment, and fear to a world from which such things had seemed well-nigh banished, has come near to breaking my spirit altogether. Homo sapiens, as he has been pleased to call himself, is played out. You know what the difference is between those two quotes, other than the obvious? The first one he wrote in 1937. The second one he wrote a decade later in 1946. And of course, what happened in between was World War II, with all of the atrocities that affected hundreds of millions of people. It's hard to avoid the conclusion that something is fundamentally wrong with our world and with people. A similar shattering of utopian dreams with comic relief is expressed by the comedian Jack Handley, the one who always came up with the deep thoughts. Well, this is one of his deep thoughts. I can picture in my mind a world without war, a world without hate, and I can picture us attacking that world because I'd never expect it. I mean, even in the humor, we can see that there's something about human nature there that... There's a couple other things we should consider when we talk about what is it that experience tells us. Babies. I mentioned them a moment ago. Lovable. Innocent. But they are not naturally good. I want mommy. I want milk. I want to be fed. I want to be held. I want to be comforted. And if you do not do all these things immediately, I will make your life miserable. That's narcissism. Why do parents tell their children tens of thousands of times, share your toys. Don't hit your brother. Say thank you. Why do we have to teach goodness to our children if it's something that comes naturally? Anyone who's had a child knows exactly what I'm talking about. In fact, I think with most of us, with our firstborns, because they're just so adorable and so lovable, and we see them as a blank slate, and then the first time they show defiance, rebellion, we think we haven't seen it correctly. Well, certainly the child didn't just do that. I still remember teaching our firstborn, slapping the hand that you don't touch the stereo knobs. And I still remember him going, looking at me and reaching for that knob. Where does that come from? Where does that come from? And then there's another question. As was posed by Dennis Prager. I don't know if you know his name. He's a talk show host in Los Angeles. He's Jewish and a very witty guy. And he posed the question, let me ask you this. If people are basically good, why does every civilization have so many laws to control human behavior? New York City during the blackout. And I love the way Dennis Prager put it. Knowing all this, those who believe that people are basically good have simply made a decision to believe that and ignore all the evidence. Why do people commit evil? Because it's easy to, because it's tempting to, and yes, because it often accords with human nature. That is why figuring out how to make good people is the single most important project in all of human life. But first, you have to believe it's necessary. G.K. Chesterton, who most people haven't heard of today, but in the early 20th century, he was one of the most read and listened to people in England, was the author of the Father Brown Mysteries and an essayist, journalist. I loved his observation when he said, "The doctrine of original sin is the only philosophy empirically validated by 3,500 years of human history." But what does Christianity tell us? What does the Bible tell us about human nature? And let's look at some of those things now for the time that's remaining. We're going to parachute in on Romans 5 in the middle of some statements that Paul is making. For the sake of time, we're not going to read the whole context, but he's talking about sin amongst human beings. He is referencing the fact that sin began with Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and because of their rebellion, we now have human beings that are naturally born sinners, born not naturally good. And referring to Adam's sin, he says in Romans 5:18, "So then, as through one transgression there resulted condemnation to all men, even so through one act of righteousness there resulted justification of life to all men. For as through the one man's disobedience, that is Adam, the many were made sinners, even so through the obedience of the one, that is Jesus, the many will be made righteous." Flip back a couple of chapters of Romans chapter 3. And lest we think that Paul is only concerned about Jewish folks and his assessment here is only referring to those of the people of Israel, he makes it clear that he has a much more expansive understanding of mankind when he says, beginning in verse 9, "What then? Are we better than they? Not at all, for we have already charged that both Jews and Greeks," and Greeks was a way of referring to Gentiles in general, "that both Jews and Greeks are all under sin. As it is written, there is none righteous, not even one. There is none who understands. There is none who seeks for God. All have turned aside. Together they have become useless. There is none who does good. There is not even one." And if we were to read on down through verse 18, we would discover that people are sinners by nature and people are sinners by action. Now, understandably, the question arises, is this not overstating it? There's all kinds of programs by the church and society to feed the poor, to provide medical care for the needy, to meet the needs of the disenfranchised and the marginalized and those who are the victims of abusive regimes. So there's lots of good things. But the kernel to understanding what he's getting at is that there is none righteous. And what is righteous? Righteous is being like God. God is righteous. And so he's not saying that the depravity and the nature of man is so bad that man is not capable, still as an image bearer of the God who created him, that man cannot do some good, benevolent things. Indeed, we do. But no matter how many good things we do, and this is taught throughout the New Testament, no matter how many good things we do, it's never good enough to make us righteous before God. Notice how all-encompassing, four times he says none, none righteous, none who understand, none who seeks for God, none who does good. Not even one. All have turned aside. We speak of original sin or total depravity. That is what the Bible, that's what Christianity teaches concerning human nature. So there would not be any confusion in all of the debate. The message of the Bible is that man is not naturally good. He is naturally evil. But it does not mean that every man has exhibited his depravity as thoroughly as he could. It does not mean that human beings do not have conscience. It doesn't mean that all sinners will indulge in every kind of sin. And as I've already said, it doesn't mean that depraved man does not perform actions that are good in the sight of man. But what it does mean is that this corruption extends to every part of man's nature, including all the faculties of his being, and that there's nothing in a man that can commend him to a righteous God. Blaise Pascal, a brilliant mathematician who died way too young in his 30s, 17th century Frenchman, Pascal said, "The Christian religion, then, teaches men these two truths, that there is a God whom men can know, and that there is a corruption in their nature which renders them unworthy of Him. It will be one of the confusions of the damned to see that they are condemned by their own reason, by which they claim to condemn the Christian religion." Jeremiah 17:9, Old Testament prophet, says this about your heart and mine: "The heart is more deceitful than all else and is desperately sick. Who can understand it?" Matthew 15, beginning in verse 18, listen to what Jesus says. This is Jesus' diagnosis of the human heart. "But the things that proceed out of the mouth," said Jesus, "and come from the heart, those defile the man. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, slanders. These are the things which defile the man, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile the man." And of course, they were addressing the issue he was with the scribes and Pharisees about what it meant to be clean before God, and they were so obsessed and preoccupied with all the external ceremonial ablutions and cleansing their hands and cleansing the utensils that they were giving all of this attention to the external and ignoring the internal, which is exactly what Jesus puts his finger on. The human heart is corrupt. In Ephesians 2:3, the Apostle Paul writes, "Among them we too all formerly lived in the lusts of our flesh." He's talking about before he became a follower of Christ. "We lived in the lust of our flesh, indulging the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, even as the rest." By nature, we are children of wrath. And the word for nature there is the Greek word physis, where we get physics. It means the essence of something or someone, the native condition, the native instinct. That's such a bleak diagnosis. So why can the Christian smile? Well, you all already know the answer, but I'll start with Ezekiel, who gives this promise from the Lord, "And I will give them one heart and put a new spirit within them, and I will take the heart of stone out of their flesh and give them a heart of flesh." So this cold, stony heart that by nature rebels against God, the Spirit of God will come in and change that heart. 2 Peter 1:4, the Apostle Peter states, "For by these he has granted to us his precious and magnificent promises, so that by them you may become partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world by lust." So when a person becomes a Christian, when a person acknowledges their sin, confesses their sin, repents of their sin, and believes on the Lord Jesus Christ, then God sees us as righteous because Christ's righteousness, we become clothed in that. So God sees us as acceptable in His sight, not because of all the good works we've done, but because of the righteousness of Christ, which has been bestowed upon us. And when that happens, we start to actually participate in and be partakers of the divine nature, a new nature. If that does not happen, then it will forever be true of any particular person, as Isaiah says, your iniquities have made a separation between you and your God, and your sins have hidden His face from you so that He does not hear. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who is now dead, a very famous Russian author. He was a part of the communist system early on and fell out of favor and was imprisoned, spent time in a Siberian prison. Once he was released, he was then exiled from his country and stripped of his citizenship and lived in Europe and then finally in America for a number of years. But he was a voice of reason and a voice challenging the whole communistic system and what it was doing to human beings. And I thought his observation at this point would bring further clarification to what we're saying here this morning. Alexander Solzhenitsyn observed, "If only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessary only to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. But the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being, and who is willing to destroy a piece of his own heart?" When I was a young Christian and a student at the university and actively involved with a group that was sharing Christ with students, when people would come with this argument of people being basically good, I used to use the rather simplistic analogy that if you're making an omelet, and I don't care how much you add to that omelet by the way of spices and meat and cheese and all of that, you're never going to get a good omelet if the egg you're working with is rotten. You're not going to get a tasty omelet from a rotten egg. I referenced Tim Keller's book, which I do recommend to you, Reason for God. It's especially good to give to unbelieving friends, as I've passed it along to a couple of friends. But in one of the chapters there, he relates this incident, and I love this. You'll remember it, those of you that have read it. There was a professor from Columbia University, a humanities professor. And some years ago, he decided to do research on Alcoholics Anonymous. And it prompted him to travel the country and sit in on Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And he was attending one in New York City in the basement of a church. And as he was sitting there, what is described as a very crisply dressed young man stood up and started talking about his problems. And in his narrative, he was absolutely faultless. All his mistakes were due to the injustice and betrayals of other people. He spoke of how he was going to avenge himself on all those who had wronged him. Every gesture gave the impression of just grievously wounded pride. And this professor said it was clear that the young man was trapped in his need to justify himself, and that things could only get worse and worse in his life until he recognized this. Well, while he was speaking, an African-American man in his 40s, with sunglasses on and dreadlocks, leaned over to the professor and said, "I used to feel that way too before I achieved low self-esteem." And of course, when he meant he achieved low self-esteem, he had come to a point where he saw himself as a flawed human being. He saw himself as a sinner. I hope you've heard me. Yes, mankind does a lot of good things, but evil is rampant. And even the good things a lot of us do is not enough to give us the right to be in heaven with God the Father. And hopefully for those who have not entrusted themselves to the Lord Jesus Christ, they will not stop responding and searching to that probing that the Spirit of God often does. And indeed, Augustine had it right when he said, "Our hearts are restless until they find their rest in Thee." One of the songs we sing has the words, "There's nothing that my hands can do to save my guilty soul. I cannot cleanse my filthy stains or make my spirit whole. For nothing but the blood of Christ can all my sins erase. I dare not claim my righteousness, but hide within His grace. 'Tis Christ who saved me from the depths. God's pardon I've received. I'm washed within His precious blood. My heart is sprinkled clean." Are human beings basically good? No, we are not. But we have a Creator who has initiated and who has reached out to us to resolve this polluted, corrupt hearts that we all have. And it's truly quite wondrous. And in fact, I would say the most impressive miracle in the Bible, next to the resurrection of Jesus, is a man or a woman who becomes a new creature in Christ and gets freed from the corruption of a sinful heart.